You're tuned to KDWA AM 1460, FM 97.7, and you're listening to Community In-Depth. I'm your host for this segment, Mike Rude, and I have Representative Tony Juergens from the Minnesota House on the line. How are you doing this afternoon, Representative Juergens?
Doing the best that, like everyone else, the best that we can to hang in there.
Excellent. It's been kind of a busy week up at the Capitol. We've had some new information coming from Governor Walz, and there's a lot of stuff going on still with the session, even though we're dealing with COVID. I'd like to start with Governor Walz's daily briefing last Thursday, where he extended the stay-at-home directive through May 18th. Take us through that a little bit.
So the governor's order to extend the stay-at-home order to May 18th, it kind of tipped his hand, and many of us were suspecting that, although we didn't really know the exact date on there, we kind of suspected that he would extend the stay-at-home order but loosen it. And he had foreshadowed that a little bit with some of the things that he had said, and that is the order that he came out with. So the stay-at-home order that was to end on May 4th, that got extended to the 18th. And the other side of that, the good news along with that is at least a small step forward. One of the things that we've been working on is the curbside retail sales. I've been working and been in discussions with the governor's office on that, on behalf of the Hastings Chamber and some of the chamber members that had reached out to me. I had conversations with Bruce Newstead, the president of the Minnesota Retailers Association. Bruce and I go back 20 years. I've known Bruce for a long time, and so I was working with him to help on behalf of their members statewide. And the governor did include with some stipulations on how it would work. But retailers can now sell their products curbside, much like restaurants have been doing since the order began. So this is a good thing. It's a step forward. Still not where we want to be. It's not where the retailers want to be, but it's with at least some of them, it's going to help. Many of the retailers I've heard from since that came out have said that really doesn't help their business. You know, one of the frustrations is, I hadn't even thought of it from this perspective, but Mother's Day is right around the corner. Any of the Mother's Day sales, whether it's flowers or gifts at gift shops, things like that, people rely on browsing. They want to go in, they want to look around, they want to pick something out, and some of these stores aren't really geared for online web purchases. They're trying to do that now. They're trying to make those accommodations, but that's not really what their business model has been in the past. And so for many of them, this is one of the biggest weeks of the year, and not having customers be able to come into their stores is really going to put a damper on that. It's really going to hurt. And then you look at the other side of that, and people can go into Walmart or Target or Cub Foods or the larger big box stores and make those purchases. So that's the frustrating part that I'm hearing from a lot of our local retailers. And so we'll keep pushing, and when businesses are able to open safely and show that they can do that, I'd like to see them get the opportunity to do that.
Exactly. I agree that a lot of these mom-and-pop stores, local businesses, really do like to have the browsers come in, the window shoppers and that. I think, though, the big problem with a lot of that is a lot of those smaller businesses are not set up for web or online e-tail, as they call it, as, say, the big box stores are. The big advantage with them is you can sit at home, do your browsing online, and have it ready to pick up in the store and go there. You know, the small town stores like on Main Street in Hastings probably don't have that extended a capability, and that's where that loss of revenue really is apparent.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that's really one of the things that people enjoy about Second Street in Hastings, downtown Hastings, is that is the type of shopping that you do, where you go into one store and then the next, and you browse and you find things that you want and make that purchase. And they're the ones that are really struggling through this. And even when they are given the green light to reopen, it's going to be a different model for a while. It's going to, I saw somebody said, "Boy, I don't know who is in the plexiglass business these days, but they probably are doing well." You go to many of the retail stores that are open, and they've had those plexiglass shields up. And so the smaller have in town are already making those adjustments, and those that will be hopefully reopening soon will be making those adjustments as well.
Yeah, I think it might stand to be an order of business once these restrictions are complete, you know, once we work through the restarting of the business, to hold some kind of downtown celebration. You know, a lot of the festivals are going by the wayside. I think the Downtown Business Association here is talking that Rivertown Days has been canceled, which is huge. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should start planning something for those businesses once we can get back to that. You know,
And I know the City of Hastings and the Downtown Business Association has talked about some options. We're on a weekly call with the Chamber and with the Downtown Business Association about, you know, just to answer questions and provide feedback and hear what's going on. And that is one of the things that they have been talking about, or what are some of those options, whether it's expanding, you know, the sit-down area for the bars and restaurants for outdoor dining, because the governor there, again, has sort of foreshadowed that or made comments about how once those bars and restaurants are allowed to reopen, it might be a little bit more, you know, at least initially expanded dining outdoors. So, you know, what can be done to provide more space for that?
Exactly. Another business model that has really taken a hit during this shutdown has been dental offices. I know that you mentioned you were hearing from some dentists in your constituent dentists about what's going on.
Yeah, that's a business sector that many people might not think about, but their business model has been turned upside down too. They've been open for emergency procedures, but you know, their bread and butter is the dental hygiene. It's the having, you know, however many chairs that they have, but having, you know, 3, 4, 5 hygienists going with a patient at a time.
Right.
And that's all been shut down. Mm-hmm. And so and that's what pays the bills. That's what they use to pay their rent and pay their insurance costs and pay their employees and all of that. And that side of the business has been non-existent. And Minnesota already is one of the more difficult states to start out in for dentists for a variety of reasons, the income tax and the provider tax and things like that. But there are a lot of dentists that are nearing retirement, and you just wonder if they will choose to reopen at the end of this, or if they'll just call it an early retirement and make, because of the costs associated with going back in. And even what's that going to look like? If, like I said, you have 5 chairs for dental hygienists, due for social distancing and safety, are they going to have to cut that back to 2 or 3? And then is that enough to be able to continue to pay the rent and so forth? So it's something that I've been working on, but I'm taking a much deeper look at that right now to see what we can do to help them. Because a lot of you know, people that are you know, accustomed, that are familiar with this, realize this, but you know, your oral health leads to other health. And
yes.
So, you know, if you are not keeping up with your, you know, 6-month checkup, that could lead to other issues that you have due to the buildup of bacteria and so forth. And an urgent situation can move to an emergency situation in a heck of a hurry. So those are some things that, you know, we need to provide the pathway for the dentist as well.
Exactly. I know we talked in a previous interview about doing drive-through hairstyling. Drive-through dentistry probably is not something I'm going to encourage at all.
Well, probably not. That would be a little more difficult. But, you know, and they're already accustomed to precautions.
Right.
Whether it's, you know, everybody's concerned now with COVID, as we should be. But for years, the dentists and the hygienists have been taking the necessary precautions, because you don't know if that patient coming in is HIV positive or has hepatitis or any number of other viruses or illnesses that could spread. And so, you know, as in, you know, the aerosol mist, you know, as they're spraying water into the patient's mouth and the the debris then that's in the air.
Sure.
That's how a lot of these viruses spread, and they're already accustomed to those precautions. So it's something that, the governor had said it's a matter of having available masks and other PPE, which, maybe that's it, but let's keep them in mind too as we're ramping up our supplies.
Exactly. One other thing that you wanted to discuss as we were talking before the interview started is that along with dentists needing their time to get back and get into their work, there was also an indication that there may not be enough recognition for some of those workers that are out there doing their jobs, kind of under the radar in support of first responders, specifically child care workers.
Yeah, we are hearing a lot of those that deserve the accolades. We see, the sign thanking the workers outside of Regina, thanking the healthcare workers, and we have the first responders, and many of those people, the people that are driving trucks and picking up our trash that are allowing our lives to go on, as close to normal as we can in an abnormal time. And what I've heard, my daughter works in child care, but this actually came from a different center, not the one that she works at, but just the feeling that don't forget about the child care workers in your life. They're doing their job. They're watching the kids so that these first responders and the health care workers and the truck drivers and people like that can go about their business to help serve us. So, if you're so inclined to do something nice for those on the front lines, just asking, don't forget about the child care workers that are, in many cases, making that possible.
Exactly right. And even though we have the COVID going on, and that's big and forefront in our news, there's still regular, if you can call it that, normal dealings going on, business as usual at the Capitol in the House of Representatives. You were looking a bit at the management and budget office's adjusted forecast. We have a few minutes left. Why don't we discuss that a little bit?
Yeah, in the coming days, the Office of Management and Budget will be doing an update to their most recent forecast or projection. I think we talk about it every week, but the latest official forecast called for a $1.5 billion budget surplus, and that with the revenues down, the tax revenues down, and the spending up, that's as good as gone. And that's just our own speculation, because we can take a look at those numbers. The income tax and corporate tax and sales tax revenues have been down. But the Office of Management and Budget is going to do a more official forecast, an updated forecast, so we'll know where we're at. Many of our committee meetings, the ones that I sit on, we're still hearing bills, and a lot of these bills have fiscal notes attached to them or spending attached to them. And one of the questions that we keep asking is, where is that money coming from? Does the Education Committee, for example, have a target? Are they allowed to spend a certain amount of money? But we don't know. There is no target at this point because we don't know the overall budget outlook. And so it's very likely that based on the news coming out in the next few days, that we'll have to make some clear adjustments to the budget that we passed a year ago, because that budget was based on projections for the next, at that point, 2 years, and we still have over a year to go. And so we have good programs that we hear about in committee that we just can't, I can't vote for in good conscience because I don't know where the money's coming from. And so we're just at the beginning, at the forefront of that. And we're going to have some very difficult decisions to make in the very near future.
Did the Office of Management and Budget kind of give an indication as to how soon that report, that adjusted forecast would come out?
I'm expecting it the week that this airs that this program is airing. I expect it within the next few days.
All right. And there is no way of knowing beforehand how much that adjusted forecast is going to deviate from what you already have, other than that wind, or not the windfall, I'm sorry, the budget surplus is gone.
And, you know, one of the other things, too, that will hinge on that is the bonding bill, this being a bonding year, and how much will we be able to borrow, because bonding is borrowing money. Mm-hmm. On one hand, you look at it saying, well, this is a great year to borrow more and bond more to put more people to work throughout the entire state of Minnesota working on these projects. That's one side to look at it. The other side is those bills have to be paid, too. So you don't want to go too far with it, because where's the money going to come from to service that debt? And so once we get that information from the management and budget office, then I think you're going to start to see in the final 3 weeks of session, talk of a bonding bill. I think will really heat up, because we'll have a better idea of where we can go with that, and hopefully come to some sort of an agreement between Democrats and Republicans, Senate and House, and see where we can, a target number that we can shoot for a bonding bill as well.
Yeah, and we talk about this other thing too a lot. Do you kind of get the sense of whether or not there's going to be a special session to deal with that?
There shouldn't be. I don't think that there's a need for it. I think that we can still do that very easily. I've seen bonding bills come up in just final minutes of session.
Okay.
And we still have 3 weeks to go. Now, it might not actually get passed until the final minutes, but there's really no reason why it should go to a special session. I have heard, and again, this is, you know, things that the governor has said, things that other leaders and legislative leaders have said, that, you know, there's going to be many changes because of COVID, because of our response to COVID. So it's possible that there could be a series of special sessions throughout the summer where the governor calls us back in to pass a certain bill that's needed, or to take certain action that's needed in response to the coronavirus. I don't think it's necessary to have to come back to do a special session for a bonding bill. But there again, if we don't get it done by the end of session for whatever reason, maybe we need more information, or maybe, there's further updates as the summer goes on to the budget situation. At that point, maybe we would want to wait, but I don't think that it's necessary. I think we can get it done in the time that we have left.
Okay. We have about 30 seconds left or so. So once again, I'd like to provide you the opportunity to provide your contact information for constituents that may have questions or concerns.
Absolutely. Send an email. And I know a lot of people have the email address, because I've gotten hundreds of emails, thousands.
Yeah.
But it's rep.tony.jurgens@house.mn, or call my office at 651-296-3135.
All right. I'd like to thank my guest, Representative Tony Jurgens, for checking in with us this week again from the House.
Thank you, Mike, and stay safe, stay well.
I will do that. You're listening to Community In-Depth on KDWA AM 1460 FM 97.7.